And welcome back to episode 134 of the Weekly Tech Wrap with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
Well, Carl, we are back for a roundup this week, as promised, of some of the top bits of the Google I.O. event recently. So we're going to talk about Pixel. And a kitchen.
Kitchen, of course.
It all will be revealed. But before that, we've also got the latest updates about Microsoft, Intel, and the TechRat rumor mill has got a couple of tasty rumors in there. I think, you know, as we get close to WWDC in the next couple of weeks' time, I think we're going to see some big news there. But yeah, so excuse me if I sound like I am the Walking Dead. I have flown back from Sao Paulo this morning before recording the show. So 11-hour flight. Somewhat bumpy in places. The classic sign of the captain was, with smooth flying conditions, forecast the route ahead. You know, a couple of lumps and bumps, we might have to turn the seatbelt sign on. AKA, the seatbelt sign will be staying on a long time. Get used to it. Yes, an interesting week looking and talking to a lot of our, you know, technology sort of friends down in that part of the world, which is, not bad. Not bad at all. Oh, it is nice to be back for a decent cup of coffee.
I bet. You would have thought South America, that they do coffee. You would have thought you could say decent.
Okay, I'll rephrase that. I will rephrase that carefully. They do lovely coffee. It is nice to be back.
It's not the coffee you're used to.
It's nice to be back to have a what I like to think of as a mug of coffee, as opposed to lots of espressos all day long. I just want to drink the stuff, you know. But yeah, anyway, let's get this show started this week. So let's kick off the first story of the week then, which is Microsoft. And this is a statement I thought I'd never say. Microsoft has bet on nuclear fusion.
Yes. I was going to say, so Microsoft have bought something, but it's not another game studio.
No.
We'll get to that one later. But yeah, they have signed an agreement to have electricity from a nuclear fusion generator. So the company's called Helion Energy, and it thinks it can deliver nuclear fusion, basically the holy grail, apparently, of energy generation, by 2028, which isn't a long way away. So, obviously, this is nuclear fusion rather than fission, okay? So, I'm not going to go too technical, but fission is basically what we use in our current nuclear reactors. You know, you spit heavy elements, so just like atomic bombs, nuclear reactors. Fusion is joining two elements. Basically what our sun does. So quite different ways of generating energy. But yeah, I mean, scientists have been trying to do this for 50, 60, 100 years, haven't they? Just forever, this has been the holy grail. But this company thinks it can do it by 2028.
Well, fusion is the kind of the holy grail because it's almost limitless energy, isn't it? You know,
it's clean.
Yeah, you're right. It produces helium.
Exactly. And there's no that radioactive material left around for hundreds of millions of years. Yeah, it's helium.
Yeah, and once a fusion reactant is up and running, it's going to run and run, and
it should be self-sustainable, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So this, like I said, this is the the limitless energy, the holy grail that we all want, because it'll be revolutionized the world as we know it. I think, you know, that's pretty fair to say. You know, it will do.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
If you can have clean energy, so the question we have to ask here is why then Microsoft?
I presume Microsoft are looking into it for powering their DCs and stuff, because I think the first one's meant to be in Washington, and it's going to be feeding into national grid. They say it'll produce 50 megawatts of power, which isn't a lot at the moment, but it's actually more than both of the USC's two offshore wind farms combined. So it is a good renewable energy as such, for the US. I see it only getting better if they can actually pull it off. And so 2028 is not very far away. I mean, we had a quote from one University of Chicago theoretical physicist, Robert Rosner, who basically said, "I would say it's the most audacious thing I've ever heard." In these kinds of issues, I will never say never, but it would be astonishing if they succeed. But I mean, they're so confident, they've actually signed a binding agreement with financial penalties if they can't build it.
Wow. There is a little interesting side note, though, isn't there, to this and one of Microsoft's recent investments? And that is that one of the founders of Helion is Sam Altman. That same Sam Altman, who this week was testifying in front of Congress because of his role in the fact that he's the CEO of OpenAI.
Oh, okay. Did not realize that.
Yes, Altman is the board chair, along, and he's been the largest investor as well into Helion. And there was an update from the Washington Post that suggests that he may have been involved in kind of brokering this deal between them.
Ah, I see.
And if he's given the fact of OpenAI, they'd be chewing through a lot of power right now, I suspect, in those data centers, you know, given that, you know, Zia and Bing Chat and all that, you know, I don't know.
Definitely.
Just a speculation, you know what I mean?
Definitely. I mean, yeah, we're going to link it in the notes. It was a good article. A lot of it was over my head when it's towards the bottom and it got really technical, but I think it's definitely worth a read.
Oh, I definitely think it's a read. And I think you're right. You know, this isn't groundbreaking. We're talking about nuclear fusion running, you know, your local power station. You know, this is, you know, a smaller scale application, but, you know, could have real impact, couldn't it?
Finding my garage to power the home lab.
Yeah, don't get me started there.
The electricity bill's a mountain. I could deal with some solar panels or a nuclear fusion reactor.
There is indeed. Before we move on to the other story, talk a quick one on ChatGPT there. So OpenAI have actually finally launched their own official iOS app, haven't they?
They have.
For that. Because there were a third... well, no, I was just going to say, there were a few third-party applications that, you know, kind of using the APIs to get access to ChatGPT, but this is now the official way to do it. And it also has an NLP converter, so you can talk to it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very cool.
So once that's available and we can get access to it, we'll come back to that one as well. But yeah, nuclear fusion then is the way forward for Microsoft. At least they are thinking that way. And, you know, we should start to see, you know, maybe some, you know, maybe other applications here, other companies. If Helion can pull off what they say they can pull off, maybe this might be how we power data centers, you know, in the near future.
May well be. Or maybe large parts of the grid if it scales up.
Well, yeah. My God, yeah. I mean, that would be far better, I'm sure. But, you know, very, very good. Okay, then. So talking of Microsoft then, obviously last week there was some pretty...
Major news.
Major news, yeah, to be quite frank, wasn't it? As we said, just to recap on that, the UK CMA did one hell of a U-turn, didn't they, really? And basically told Microsoft, ain't happening here, mate. And you will not be taking over Activision Blizzard, or Blizzard Activision, sorry. Activision Blizzard, excuse me, emerging. But not only will you not be merging with them, we're not even going to allow you to buy chunks of each other up, are we?
That's the other bit. No, that was the other one. And that was the other one, because we thought they were actually going to say yes. But they've said no, and surprisingly, the EU has said yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they went on to say basically, you know, Microsoft have addressed the concerns on the competition issues. Now, Microsoft's offer of that 10-year free license deal, which basically promises European consumers and cloud game streaming services access to Activision's entire lineup, PC and console games, meaning there will be fair competition in the market, they said.
Terrorists, yeah.
Which is what we were kind of saying. And then, you know, they went on to say basically the commitments they've made fully address the competition concerns identified by the commission, and represents a significant improvement for cloud gaming as compared to the current situation. So they're saying that cloud gaming will be better when Microsoft buy Activision. it's the exact opposite of the UK.
It does not make any sense, does it? It does not make any sense whatsoever.
They also said it wouldn't harm any rival consoles and rival multi-game subscription services. And they also said that, you know, the cloud gaming streaming services themselves, the providers, gave positive feedback and showed interest in the licenses, with some having already entered into agreements. We've heard about that, NVIDIA, etc. And others due to. Very different turnabout. And I haven't got it in my notes, but I remember reading in the news this week that a lot of the MPs in Parliament in the UK are questioning the CMA, saying, well, if the EU thinks it's okay, why are we saying no? And the CMA came back and basically said, well, that's their decision, but we're still saying no.
Something tells me this is not over yet, is it?
No, not at all.
So, We have a no from the UK.
Yeah.
We have a yes from the EU.
Yeah.
And we are still waiting for... Oh, we've got some yeses from Brazil, I think, wasn't it?
And Japan.
And Japan. And wasn't it the Middle East? Someone in the Middle East, I think, one of the...
Yeah.
But we still don't know where the US is going to lie on this, is it?
It's just like the X Factor, isn't it? Yes. Look, no, it's a maybe from me.
Yeah, you know, maybe come back next time. I just... You know, if this goes to... If this is going to the wire, let's just say the US, you know, go, yes, we're going to allow this deal.
Yeah.
We're going to allow the merger. Well, I mean, that puts the UK in a pretty precarious situation, really, doesn't it?
Well, I mean...
From a gaming perspective.
I mean, they either keep trying or they appeal. But if, you know, even if the appeal goes no and everyone else has said yes, Microsoft's only option might be to go, well, goodbye, UK, and we'll pull out.
Yeah, we could lose
Game Pass. Not better for UK consumers.
Well, we could lose xCloud, especially.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine. I don't know how far we go. Would they? I don't think they. I don't know. They could definitely start by saying, "Right, well, no xCloud, or no Activision games on xCloud in the UK." I mean, they could pull Game Pass. They could pull out completely, which I don't think they would do, unless they really, really hate the CMA.
Yeah, I you know, I think we talked about last week. I think the, you know, the kind of likely areas are removing Game Pass, aren't they? Removing xCloud, excuse me, and not allowing any of the X Activision Blizzard stuff to show up anywhere. You know, we'll have to pay for that. This is not done. We know Microsoft have hired, you know, a very high powered legal team to represent themselves in an appeal. They are not going to take this lying down. No way.
I mean, and as I think we spoke offline about this, I mean, the other option is they just go, all right, we're not doing cloud gaming anymore. It's still a very niche market. It might, certainty it will actually take off and be successful. You know, there are certain limitations, especially when you go mobile. The fact that you need an actual internet connection. Would it be a great loss if they went and pulled out? I mean, for Microsoft, you know, it might well be for us, but for Microsoft, financially, would it be a massive loss? Would they gain more from buying Activision and pulling out of cloud gaming than keeping cloud gaming and not getting Activision?
That's a really good question, and it does make you wonder whether or not they would do that. I mean, that's a real major, like, dead, isn't it, to do that? Yeah. You know?
But then, you know, at that point, the CMA couldn't say no. We're no longer in a cloud gaming market. That was your only objection.
Yeah.
Sign the paper, guys.
That's a brutal approach, in my view. But
It is. But, I mean, if they were that determined that the deal will go through and that is the only thing holding it up, could they do it? Yeah, they could. I think they will make more money out of Activision Blizzard than they will ever make out of cloud gaming.
At this point, yeah.
Especially because they basically give it away for free. So it's a loss to them.
But is it a loss that they would not want to concede?
I mean, that's... We pay for Game Pass Ultimate. Yes. Would you still pay for Game Pass Ultimate if they dropped xCloud out of it? At what we pay a month, $10.99? I still would, without reservation.
I was just going to say to you, I wouldn't even have to... There's no hesitation at all, because... There's nothing there. I've used I can count on one hand the times I've used xCloud.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not always been a great experience, even at home on a decent connection. Yeah. There are certain games racing games I can't play. Well, you know, even at its best, there are minute lags. That lag is too much for me to enjoy the racing game, where I can tell that I move the joystick and the action on screen hasn't quite caught up with what I've done physically.
And do you know the thing I'd really like, which isn't, and I correct me if I'm wrong, is a keyboard and mouse support.
Yeah, because it's all based on actual Xbox, isn't it? You're not like NVIDIA streaming a PC one. It is, and there's only certain games that support keyboard and mouse, but I don't know if xCloud does. I don't think it does.
That's what I would like, you know. But I think you're right. We will have to see what's happening. You know, this is, as we said, it's not over yet, and it's not over by a long shot either. But I don't know if the FTC have got a date on this yet, have they? because they did the FTC took Microsoft to court, didn't they, last year? And that hasn't been resolved yet.
No, it's still going through the process. So I don't know when that's due. This deal isn't going to close in this year.
No, they've got to. There's going to be one hell of a write down on their both of their fiscal years. Terrible.
Yeah, it's going to be well into next year, I think, before it's fully resolved one way or the other.
Definitely. Well, there we go. So from one weird thing last week to another weird thing this week, the Microsoft deal continues to surprise everybody. Pull up your seat, keep your popcorn topped up. It ain't done yet.
No. Our next article. This is a surprising one. So obviously we've spoken about Intel and their plans for the Arc GPUs and, well, you know, as it currently stands, they're not bad at the lower mid range.
There
are a lot of teething troubles, but they're getting the drives in order. Each driver release, we're seeing massive performance increases. They're still not rivaling Nvidia and AMD in the mid high range or above, are they? But
no.
This might be about to change in the mobile front, aren't they? So the rumors doing the rounds is that the high end versions of the onboard Xe GPUs in Intel's upcoming Meteor Lake CPU range, I think it's due out at some point this year. So the top version of the integrated GPU is going to have 128 execution units and, ready for it, be on par performance-wise with discrete mobiles like the GTX 1650 and possibly even the RTX 3050.
I mean, that is unbelievable on a mobile
integrated.
Yeah.
And those are discrete ones. So obviously the benefits of discrete is you've got extra silicon, you can put more bits on it, it's not limited by the CPU there, you've got more power, but on mobile, that's a problem, So having that power on the CPU with all the power saving that entails over that discrete GPU, I think is, frankly, great. I mean, we need some more of that. You don't always need a full desktop one. If you could happily do 1080p medium settings with all day battery life,
that's it. They are.
I mean, I've got what have I got? I've got a ASUS ROG something or other 14-inch gaming laptop, and it's got it's really good. It's got a 3050 in it. 1440p screen. I can play Forza Horizon 5. At a decent resolution, decent graphics, decent frame rate. Yeah, on battery though, I probably get an hour and a half, maybe. And that's generously. If I could get 7 or 8 hours or more playing at maybe slightly reduced settings, all the same, if it's going to be the same as a 3050, then that would be amazing.
I mean, I was reading this and I was like, that is the real sweet spot, isn't it? And as we said, Intel have been doing great, in that kind of low-end part of the market, they've been slowly but steadily building up a very steady product there, since launch. Not really troubling the big boys yet, as you say, but with this, we could see a whole new range of gaming laptops here, really, couldn't we?
We could. And I don't know, they're a bit behind. So, Nvidia have just released their 4050. AMD have got their 7000 series discrete GPUs. But it doesn't have to compete with those, I don't think. If it can hit 50, 60, 70% of the performance of those new ones, at less cost because it's built in. It's built into the CPU, it's not extra, and considerably less power, they've got a winner there.
Yeah, I think they have. Absolutely fine. Thinking for most of the tasks, mobile gaming, laptop gaming, the kind of stuff that I'd like to play on the run, I don't necessarily need the high end. That's not the kind of games I want to be playing. I want to be able just to pick up something, like Football Manager or something like that, or other stuff.
I like playing Wreckfest or Horizon.
Some of them's not going to give it a real...
I'll do a bit of Ghost Recon. Well, while I'm sitting in a hotel room, we've got a mouse there, a bit of Ghost Recon. I don't need the settings at 4K, HDR, ultra widescreen, whatever. I don't need that. I'm on a 14-inch screen.
I wonder if Framework will come out with these soon.
Well, Framework are talking about adding... they'll have that GPU when it comes out, but the latest one, it's not released, is it? It's going to have modular GPUs in it, so you can have both.
Yeah, I'm starting to think, there are cheaper ways now, cheaper ways to get into mobile gaming, to get into laptop gaming, as it were. Mobile gaming's not the right statement here, but for battery life, I think this is the way forward. You're right. This is a pair of aces in the hand, isn't it? high performance, great battery life, and the gaming. I mean, not what more
and
do you want?
Cheaper.
And cheaper, but it will cook your legs. That's what you mentioned here.
Yeah, we used that word laptop recently. Yeah, as loosely, I should say. Yeah. Who wants to actually stick one on their lap? Certainly not while gaming.
Yeah, you're right. Where did you get your tan? I sat at my desk. You know, like,
but it's just a tan on your lap, nowhere else.
Yes, it's a very strange. Yes, you know. Yeah, no bad at all. So we got any idea on pricing at the moment?
Or no, definitely not. It's going to be 3 or 4 months, I think, before they even release it. So yeah, we'll be waiting a little while. Yeah.
So, but I don't know. So, have you seen any of the other kind of standalone Arc range yet? Any kind of decent reviews? You know, that you
wanted no, to but I keep seeing them appear on eBay, and I'm tempted to buy one for my server.
Oh, we did look at that, didn't we? That was right the other week, wasn't it?
They're hovering around just over 100 quid. I've seen a couple floating around. Yeah. I think they're lower. Is it the 380s? I want to say.
Yeah, that's not too bad, is it? Really, and they, you know,
just sticking and running on my Plex server. I need to do some more research about whether it'll actually work and will we get any benefits. Because I think the main reason I want it is for the AV1 encode decode.
Yeah.
But then we still need the clients to be able to do
which
that.
Which is the problem.
Material in AV1. So maybe I'm a little early to the game yet, but on that. But I'll keep an eye on it.
Prices are not, I don't think prices are going to leap up at the minute, are they? So I think we could be in a good place.
And that's good. What did I pay for them? I've got a P650, is it? Quadro in one of them. And then a P4000. Was it a P2000?
Okay.
But I must have paid 300 or 400 quid for that one, even on eBay.
Not bad. Okay. All right. Well, I think, you know,
more performance for 100 quid rather than 300. That's a
much better value. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Well, that was definitely a turn up for the books. Then, you know, we've been talking about Arc for a couple of years now, haven't we? I think, you know,
we're still on the first generation. Technically, we've not moved to Battle Mage or anything like that, have we yet? So,
oh no, I forgot about their cool names.
Yep, Battle Mage. I can't remember what the one beginning with C was.
No, they haven't launched it yet because the Battle Mage.
Battle Mage is the next one. Yeah.
Yeah, and they Battle Mage look like they kind of have the same sort of reference style design as the Nvidia and AMD.
Celestial is the one beginning with C.
Oh, that was it.
Battle Mage and Celestial, yeah.
Yeah, because the Battle Mage has a double core count of the A770, the entry level series. So,
and we should see Battle Mage at some point next year and Celestial in 2026.
That's it, yeah. Well, Battle Mage is supposed to be Q, according to Intel's roadmaps, Q124.
And Druid, that's the one after.
Oh, don't. Walk
this
away,
one's
walk
obviously
away.
Alchemist.
It is Alchemist indeed, yes. And well, there are two gens on Alchemist already, wasn't there? There's Alchemist, yeah. Alchemist Plus. Okay, then. So before we go down the rabbit hole of Battle Mages and Alchemists and Druids, and no, we are not talking D&D there. Let's talk about Google then. So the other week, Google's I.O. conference, you know, the yearly fest of Google's latest technology, updates, software, even hardware, and other kind of weird projects they're working on, isn't it? So it comes for a bit of a treat of an
hodgepodge.
Event. Yeah, that's a good word. I like that. But this week we're going to talk, kind of focus on really mainly the hardware side of it rather than software. I'll talk a little bit about the AI stuff in a minute. But Carl, do you want to kick us off then with kind of the big stories or the big products?
Big products were the Pixel Fold. The Pixel tablet comes smart display and the new Pixel 7a. So let's start with the Fold. Okay, so pretty much we knew all the details of this about 6 or 7 months ago.
We did, didn't we?
But to recap, I've got the specs. It looks like a fairly decent spec. You know, we've got probably the biggest outside screen I've seen. It's 5.8 inches, 120 hertz, 2092 by 1080, and it's an OLED screen. The inside one's bigger. Obviously it's the unfolded one, 7.6 inch, again, 120 hertz variable refresh rate, 2208 by 1840 OLED. It's got spotting 12 gig of RAM, 256 or 512 gig storage. Oddly, we didn't see the release of the G3 processor. It's still running the Tensor G2, which I find is going to be really strange when there's meant to be a Pixel 8 out later in the year or early next year, and it's going to have a G3 processor for probably half the price. Okay.
That is a little bit strange.
That's a little odd that they didn't do that or wait a bit longer. But it's got probably the biggest battery I've seen on a foldable at 4,820 milliamps. It supports fast charging. It's got a so many cameras. It's got a 48 megapixel main camera, 10.8 wide angle, a 10.8 5x telephoto. Now, it's now got an inner camera, which is 8 megapixels. Now, that's the one on the foldable screen or just above it. And then, of course, a front camera, which is above the front screen, but opposite the back one, which is 9.5 megapixels. I know. Apparently, because of the new hinge, it's IPX8 dust and water resistant.
Yeah, but it's a bit weird with that, just to kind of on that piece. Right.
Yeah.
So it's not dust resistant realistically
at
all.
Proof, it's resistant though, isn't it?
Yeah. So, but it is, you can dunk it in water, but dust will kill it.
Yeah. So you're good in the sea, just don't take it on the beach.
Yeah, sorry, when I saw the notes, I was reading those notes, I was like, what?
But it is an improvement over the others.
True.
Definitely. It comes in two colours, black or white. Now, Google are calling this the thinnest foldable on the market. Well, I think the US market, and I disagree with this actually, I'll tell you at the end. So it's 5.8 millimetres thick when it's flat, unfolded. So obviously, in the US, they sell the Galaxy Z Fold, that's 6.3 mil. The Oppo Find N2, 7.4. But outside the US, you can get the Huawei Mate X3, which is only 5.3. You can get the Xiaomi Fold 2, which is 5.4. But they seem to be forgetting, and I would call the Surface Duo a foldable.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was.
That's sold in the US. The Duo 2 is 5.5 mil, so again, thinner. And the original Duo was only 4.8 millimeter. So they're being very selective that it's the US only, and we're going to forget Microsoft exists.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a very selective... Yeah, very
and you can't even say the only Android foldable, because the Duo is Android, so they're just being selective.
Yeah, but very, very selective indeed.
The price. When you talk about the price, $1,800.
That's not as bad as it could have been, I think.
But I think it's bad because it's still running the Tensor G2. Now, the G2 wasn't a good CPU when it originally came out.
No. But it's
going to be, what, 2 years old now?
Take the CPU just to one side for a second.
Yeah, move the CPU out, and I think we've got some really good specs there.
Yeah, and the pricing as well, I think, is, you know,
it's in given line with other phones.
Yeah, and you're right, and also high-end phones as well. Because let's be honest, the top-end iPhones aren't far off that.
No, they're not.
So interestingly, though, you know, one of the pictures I saw of it, where it's folded out, and if you've seen the picture, you'll know the one I'm on about, because it looks like an iPhone on one side. So the screen's folded out. It's got like a large sort of desktop view of the, you know, the Android operating system. And then you're looking at the bottom of the fold. So one's got the USB-C on the right hand side, and on the left hand side, there's the SIM chip. Yeah. If you cover your hand over the top of that, that looks like a side of an iPhone.
It does.
But yeah, so this is coming out on June 27th, then, according to the Google store listings. Also around that, they're only launching it initially in four countries, which is going to be, if I recall, where's my notes, the UK, US, Germany, and Japan. Okay. So that is quite low, because Google typically launch Pixel phones in, they say, around, was it 13 to 17 countries, depending on the phone themselves. Obviously, you know, the big players are, you know, Apple, Samsung, you know, it's global to a degree, isn't it, really?
It is,
you know, apart
from
the full pockets. So this is, you know, very small launch. Now, I wonder, is this because we've got low supply chain issues here? We got, you know,
low supply chain and very high price for a Google phone.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine Google sell a lot of phones anyway. Not, or certainly not compared to Samsung or Apple or, you know, Xiaomi, or the big guys.
No, I mean, looking at it, again, it's like the Samsung. You know, we knew this was coming, as in, you know, the design. It looks good. I like the look of it. I'm not saying I want to use it, but I think from a design ethos, aesthetics sort of side of it, it's a decent looking device. And obviously the improvements they've done in Android 13, isn't it, to support bigger displays, has definitely shown there now. Because there's a great picture, I think, of it. It's one of them in the black colour, and it's kind of a sort of a, you know, it's like a diagonal angle. And you've got on the screen, you know, to describe, you know, listener, you've got a clock on the right-hand side. You've got like a temperature in the middle. You've got the search bar spread across the whole display, haven't you?
Yeah.
And then below that, you've got like the quick launch bar of like certain applications, and then like a schedule, I think, is probably the best way to describe it, as another block off to the right. You know, so when it's opened, it looks good. The reality is that is it going to be usable real estate? Because that's the problem I find with these things. You end up looking like some of them with like kiddie Fisher Price apps, because, you know, it's not taking advantage of the real estate on these devices. We talked a bit about this before, about like the Apple Watch Ultra. The upscaling here again, you know, so let's hope that, you know, Android, and I haven't used Android for, you know, properly for a couple of years, but I know that the improvements they've made, and, you know, especially in 13 and definitely in 14 now that they're beta testing as well, that, you know, there are going to be good, you know, good UI overloads.
And I imagine most of the apps that most people use, they're the Google ones, Maps. Google. Maps will have it. Gmail will have it. Decent support. Chrome. The Microsoft ones as well, because Microsoft have a foldable dual screen device. So your Outlook will probably do a decent one. Bing, the Microsoft Office apps will probably all have decent.
I think you're right. I think I suspect, as you say, all of the standard, you know, application sets will definitely have that. You know.
Yeah.
It just is. It's just, you know, whether other developers are going to be able to take advantage of that, which is, you know, they will do. They'll catch up, won't they?
They will. Okay, so next we're going to talk about the biggest letdown for me of the whole event, the Pixel tablet. Where to begin? It looked so good. So it's an Android tablet with a speaker dock, okay? So it looks like a Nest Hub Max, you know? It's a round speaker with a giant screen slapped to it. And, you know, it acts as a smart display with Google Voice Assistant when it's docked. But you can just basically pick up the screen and disconnect it from the speakers, and it becomes an Android tablet. You know, it changes its screen from a smart display to an Android tablet. And it's, you know, it's 11-inch. It runs Android 13L. It's got that same Tensor GT2 processor, 8-meg front rear cameras, etc. But, and that's all great. But when you disconnect that display, that speaker dock is just a giant lump of plastic that doesn't do anything. You can't stream music to it because it doesn't have Bluetooth or any Wi-Fi in it. That's all in the tablet. You can't use it as a smart speaker, you know, hey Google or whatever you say, because that's all in the tablet and not the dock. Why? I just don't understand it. I mean, Google will let you buy more stupid speaker docks at $120 a pop, but they're still just stupid until you plug the screen back in.
I was just trying to look at this and was like, who's going to buy one of these? It's a great tablet, you're right, but I just am like, I can't help thinking to myself, I've got it. I'm looking at it across the room. I've got a mini one of these right now.
I would have been interested, you know, if these were actual still, you know, if I moved from the Amazon ecosystem and I was going to move to the Google one, I wanted a couple of premium speakers, providing the speakers sound good. I don't know if they do or not. Who knows? I could see having one of those in the living room or one of those in the kitchen. But I wanted to remove the tablet and use that while still having those features there, being able to go, you know, hey, turn on the lights or whatever.
Yeah, I think I really like the display. I think it does look good. I can't say that. I would be lying to you if I said I didn't like the look of the display. I do. But the whole smart dock thing,
So do I then need another Nest Hub in the room for when I'm using a tablet that I can still use voice stuff? Or someone else in the room can use voice stuff. Because it kind of seemed very aimed at just a single person in a room experience.
It does. You know, again, you know, it's like with the phone, it's running Android 13. It's got Android L, hasn't it? The largest of dimes. You know, according to Google, they've worked with, first of all, Google optimized their own apps. So we just, you know, as you said yourself, they've done that. But they've also worked with other developers to give you better experiences on this larger screen, haven't they? So you've got two column layouts, things like that. You're right. It just, you know, I can't put my finger on it. Or I don't know.
Someone maybe didn't think this one through.
I don't think they did. I don't think they did at all.
Just speak to users, because it came up pretty early when I started looking at it and going, wait, what? I can't use it when it's just... Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's got great cameras in it, isn't it? As well, they say, those 8-megapixel cameras, you know.
Yeah.
It's a great... It's a perfect thing. And also, they've got... What's it? Google Meet has got like the equivalent of Apple Center Stage to allow you to appear, you know, in the video if you move about. great. But again, you've got to, this is a you've just got to be buying into the whole of the ecosystem, haven't you? Here with yep. this, I just yeah, I don't know. I can't. I want to love it. I want to say this is brilliant, yep. but
if they just added it and pop, how much could it really have cost to put the Google used to do those what the small little ones the voice assistants they had.
Oh, the pucks, isn't it?
The pucks. I've got three or four of them still sealed in the box.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Just
take
the brain out of that part and stick it in the bass speaker with a couple of microphones. Job done. Just turn that bit off, that brain off, when the tablet's connected. Turn it on when you've removed the tablet.
Charge
a little bit more, 10, 15, 20 quid more. I'd probably actually have bought one or more if I maybe made that move to that ecosystem.
Yeah, you're right. They are not going to, I cannot see them shifting many of these either. I think this is, again, this is going to be another one of those. You'll be picking these up on eBay very soon, very cheaply.
Yeah, because for me, in a smart house, this would have been a great way to have a panel in each room, which someone can walk up to and interact with, or just pick it up and sit on the sofa and still control all the lights and stuff like that. But yeah, just missing that key bit.
Yeah, no, I think that is it. That is kind of what we would have wanted here, isn't it? Really specialized.
That's quite niche. Right. I understand that part's niche, but even for the larger masses who are into smart speakers, the fact that it stops becoming a smart speaker as soon as you pick up the tablet means no one else can interact with the smart speaker stuff in that room.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. Anyhow.
So I guess kind of round upon it then, so this is now, I think they've given a price list, aren't they?
It's $500.
$500, isn't it? Or base entry.
$120 for each additional speaker dock if you want one.
Yeah, and it's slightly bigger than an iPad 10th gen by the look of it.
Yeah, it's 11 inch, so very slightly bigger.
But again, that G2 chip again in there, isn't it, as you say? G2 chip.
Everything's got the G2 in. Surprise, surprise, the Pixel 7a has got the G2 in.
Oh, and that's where we're going to go next.
this is a nice increase. The 7a, so it looks pretty much identical to a Pixel 7. I don't think the materials are quite as premium, but the design looks the same as the 7, 7 Pro. They've thrown a couple of extras in this time. So you're going to get wireless charging, which you never had before on an A version. You get a 90 hertz variable display, which again is the first on the A range. It's 6.1 inch, 1080p. They've bumped the rear cameras. So you've gone from 12 megapixels on the back up to 64 megapixels now. And the front's had a small bump from 8 to 13 megapixels. Nice. Good increases.
I got a lot of love for the Pixel phones and the Pixel A's particularly. I think these are perfect everyday devices, particularly business sort of devices.
Are they? They bumped the price, though.
Well, the price, I was going to say that was my...
By $100.
Up until that point, they were. But they are great. They are great. Budget's the wrong word, but they are great entry kind of level phones, really, aren't they?
Yeah.
For what you get. There's nothing to knock, realistically, apart from the price.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
they are solid phones. You still get that same G2 processor as you get on the Pro version. You get all the same Google's software magic when it comes to photography, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, they are good, solid phones. It's just a shame they bumped the price by $100. If they kept the price the same, it would have been a steal.
Yeah, that's the problem. And I think they probably would have sold like hotcakes as well.
You're now into a different range of phones, aren't you? You're competing with more premium phones at that point.
You're definitely competing with a lot more. But, they are still very good. Pricing aside, I personally, if I was in that market, I would probably look to get one still. I had several Pixels, going before. And I think, why not, The only annoying part here for anybody doing this, of course, is the Pixel 8, which is, as you say, on the horizon. And given that that wasn't obviously announced at I/O, but, we know it's coming. And Google themselves appears to have leaked it themselves, haven't they, as well?
Yeah.
Talking about the Pixel 8. So, I guess that's the only problem I find with a lot of the events, particularly the I/O event, is that they talk about these devices and then they come and launch another one straight after.
Yeah, they talk about devices we've already seen for... They ruin their own things. There are no leaks for Google anymore because they leak it all themselves.
Exactly. Well, no, nice. And some decent kit, though, if you are in the Google ecosystem, you know, that's your bag, and you want to be using the latest from Google. I think there's some great phones there, great-looking tablets. Tablet maybe not. It looks great functionally. We'll come back to that. So the only thing I've seen that they announced at AI was, the other thing announced at I.O. was AI. Too many acronyms here. Google have been quietly working on a lot of AI projects for some time. Now, you may recall we spoke about Lambda some months ago, which was supposedly the sentient AI that wanted to be freed. Lambda now powers Bard. So Bard is the kind of the equivalent to ChatGPT, which gives you the ability to use a large language model. And you can ask it questions, you can help, with writing blog posts, all kinds of different capabilities there. Yeah. Bard now has just had an upgrade. So Bard uses a model called Palm 2. So Palm 2, which is Google's, that's P, capital P, lowercase a, LM, is their advanced language learning model. They announced it in August 22. Version 2 is the one that's running now. And that is, written into several of their different applications. Mm. It will support over 100 languages, and obviously very similar to ChatGPT, likes tasks, the coding, writing, anything where it can leverage data to show that. At I/O, Google showed off 25 different products that are powered by Palm, and apparently there are four current models, which are Gecko, Otter, Bison, and Unicorn, which can be used for different purposes. Yeah, there's a lot going on here. So we started with Bard then. We talked about Bard. So Bard has now been improved. Bard now can do code debugging, collaboration. It loads 20 different languages, so that's coding languages. It can do citations, and it also has over several languages growing to 40 languages, i.e. country languages and regional languages going forward. They've now given it a dark theme, so I know you'll be happy there, Carl.
Oh, I love me a dark theme.
But it's also some interesting points coming. They're not released yet, but there are some new visual features, because at the moment, like ChatGPT, it's all about the text prompt and what you can do with it. Now, visual features are coming soon. So very shortly, you'll be able to... get a response that includes tables or maps or even images as part of that response rather than text. Alternatively, they're going to give Google Lens access to Bard, so you can upload photos straight into Bard and then ask it to create a prompt based on that photo. Now, we did mention that ChatGPT were working on something very similar, weren't we? That they were looking at creating slides and outputs on that. So this is that same point. Google are also working with several external partners as well. One of those is Adobe, and they're bringing the Firefly extension to Bard as well. And again, that is going to be now a mid-journey, OpenDALI kind of integration. Bard, create me a picture, of an elephant riding a kayak pedaling over the moon. And it will then drop that into the chat. They're also working with other partners as well, people like retail, Instacart, OpenTable, as well as Wolfram, those people who do
Wolfram Alpha.
And the Khan Academy from a learning perspective as well. So this is definitely coming. By the way, there is no wait list now. You can just go use Bard. So you don't have to sign up. The other problem is around search integration with AI. So again, trying to keep themselves up to the speed where Bing chat, we've all been a good Bing. There'll be new AI generation search experience. So SGE. And this will have AI-powered snapshots, which Google call them, which means gives them information alongside, their search. So if you've used Bing Chat, the new version, you'll know that you can ask it to something and it gives you like a summary page or links to sources and that. Google is developing this at the moment. It isn't available GA. It's going to be in their new search labs, which, again, if you can, I think you can join the wait list now, if I remember correctly. So that is going to be there. Now, remember, the biggest search engine in the world today is still Google. So actually, by pushing this into their platform, this could leapfrog them, I think, over Bing Chat and Microsoft ultimately. The other one as well is the one that I'm keen to see more of is the AI integration to Workspace. So many companies, including our own, use Workspace, as opposed to Microsoft's far superior tooling. And if we also mentioned Copilot a few weeks ago, which is Microsoft's approach to bring AI generative capabilities into the Office platform, isn't it? So, give it a prompt, it'll write a slide, document, etc. So Google are doing something really similar. They're calling it Workspace, you know, Workspace AI. There'll be a new feature in Gmail that will say, help me write. So okay. If at the minute, it will do that, wouldn't it? You've seen, you know, we've all probably used that, you know, where you're typing and it starts to prompt a sentence or a word, doesn't it?
Exactly. You start an email of hi.
Yeah.
It fills the name in automatically for you, you know, if you've got it in the toolbar or you're applying to someone. So yeah, it has a good guess at it.
Well, this will use generative AI to even create auto replies to emails.
Ah, I won't have to do anything then, will I?
No. Also, in Google Slides, it's going to be a help me visualize piece where you can get prompts to create user generated images. That's rolling out next month, but only to select organizations. So I had a look at this. They are allowing organizations to sign up for this, but I think they've been very picky who they want to touch it.
Okay.
The same as Google Maps is going to get called an immersive view for routes, which gives you like a bird's eye view of the entire path in what they call a multi-dimensional experience. So it's almost like AR, I guess, isn't it, for maps in that respect?
Yep.
Other ones, again, Google Photos getting Magic Editor. Well, probably, again, similar to what we've already had, but now, you know, being able to adapt the lighting, move people around, all using AI. I mean, that is just, again, we're stepping into a world now of what is true, what is false, isn't it, really?
It is.
So that. It is interesting to note that Copilot has not released yet, has it, for Office? I think only to a very select, set of users.
Yeah.
There is no word on the beta or the GA on that. So, you know, Google could leapfrog here, couldn't they? A possibility, yeah. Oh, sorry. The other couple I just wanted to finish off was Android wasn't left out either. So Android is going to get personalization features again with generative AI. So Magic Compose is probably, again, with like the emails, you're going to be able to have the ability to auto create messages. Just you can type as you want and then you select change the tone and the message will rewrite itself. You know, if you want to be more professional or you want to, you know, be funny, I don't know, or something like that, you know. So, and that as well. New emoji wallpapers, again, generated through AI. You can also get the AI to create new wallpaper from scratch. That will be coming to Pixel next year, where you can basically say, I don't know, I want a wallpaper scene of trees in the woods with a blue sky, and it'll just create the wallpaper.
Wow.
And then finally, you've got a Duet AI for Google Cloud. So this is now, how can they get developers to build on top of these LLMs that Google have got there? So Duet is that platform for doing it. So it's a development interface, again, powered by AI, of course it is, that allows chat assistants, coding assistants on top of Google Cloud Platform. So you can rewrite code, integrate applications, and get the code assistant also to basically debug it for you as you're writing it. So that's, you know, really, you know, starting to, you know, I don't want to say move away from, you know, taking jobs away, but it's more about, isn't it, I think, again, around enhancing that, isn't it? How do you get people to work smarter, you know?
Yep, definitely.
And the other thing I've been playing with is they've released the AI Test Kitchen. So as we talked about in the warm open there, you know, we talked about kitchens. Well, Google have got the Test Kitchen, the AI Test Kitchen. And one of the things in there you can play with at the moment, once you get onto the wait list, is the ability to generate music.
Yes.
You give it a prompt and it will create music, you know, unique music tracks for you. Now, they're not very long. It gives you two tracks based on your prompt. You then give it like a thumbs up or a trophy to which one that you feel is closest to your prompt, so you can help train the model going forward. Now, I've been playing with this on and off the last few days and I've had a couple of minutes spare. And yeah, okay, don't get me wrong. It's not going to give, the latest, you know, band or you know, whoever, a billion record sales, you know, challenge. But if this is the start of where this is going, it will not be long, given the rate of, you know, the rate of kind of updates and evolution that we see in Midjourney and ChatGPT. This is going to be able to create original tracks that sound exactly like you want, you know, to the point of, give me a track that sounds like, I don't know, just for all intents and purposes, give me a track that sounds like, you know, the Rolling Stones, 1976 album, but mix it with, I don't know, this current, you know, track from X, and I bet you it will spit something out, and then you just have to overlay the vocals on top, which, you know, you could get one of those other AI models to write you the the lyrics, and then another model to sing them back to you, which is not outside of the probability right now, is it?
So, pretty crazy.
Very, very crazy there. But yeah, I think for me, that was one of the big things. Yeah, I love the hardware, but definitely I'm now looking more closely at the AI capabilities here. Just as a kind of final note on AI, we mentioned Sam Altman, you know, the OpenAI guy or CEO. He testified, I say, to Congress or Senate 2 days ago. And he calls for regulation. He calls for regulation. But he's clear to say, you know, he just doesn't know how. But he was very clear that they feel that this industry needs to start being regulated because he feels that they're a cusp of a changing, a change in the world of technology. But his also view was that, you know, technology evolution is ongoing. This isn't, a big bang that happens every now and then. We are constantly, you know, moving on a pathway of evolution, and this is just the next step. So it was a very interesting thing. I'll try and link it to the show notes if I can, to the session that he spoke about. Okie dokie then. So where are... Ah, yes, I know what's next. Hang on a minute. Hang on, wait for it. So then, as I say, we've got WWDC coming up on the 5th of June, isn't it? Yep.
It sounds about right, yep.
And that's what, 2 weeks away, isn't it? Isn't it 2 weeks?
Is it the 5th or is it the 6th?
Monday the 5th. Well, WWDC runs 5th or the 6th. So
the keynote will be the 5th then, yeah.
Keynote. So Monday the 5th keynote, we'll have all of this that week. We'll cover all of that show. But we're getting a couple of leaks, and of course one of those is around the Reality Pro headset, isn't it? So the big bucks one.
It is indeed. So first up, XROS, which is the OS for the Reality Pro headset, and unsurprisingly, it'll be able to run iPad apps. I mean, they would be silly if they didn't. So it's not really a surprise, but we're kind of seeing confirmation of that now. Maybe it ties in. So Apple announced Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro for the M iPads, didn't they? iPad M1, M2, which is people have been asking for years and years and years, haven't they? So finally,
just a pause on that for a second. This tells you something massively.
Yeah.
That they didn't announce that at an event. They did that through a press release.
Yeah, they're clearing the way for something big at an event.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the rumor is that you'll maybe able to use Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro on the Reality Pro headset. And I think that'd be really good. It'd certainly aid in productivity there. Because even on an iPad, you can get fairly large ones now. You're still constrained to a single screen as you plug it in. On a VR headset, you could put up 3 or 4 different screens and put different windows and panes on that and give you a lot more real estate to be creative with.
Yeah, I'm curious about this though, because it's been like, so what are they going to do there? Are they going to have all these apps redeveloped, or is it going to upscale them into some 3D environment?
Be like just apps running in it. There'll be like virtual windows floating around if you're just taking a normal iPad app. But then I presume you can develop apps specifically for it. And remember, this isn't just a VR. It's meant to be mixed reality. It's meant to have AR as well. So those apps in AR so you can still see your desk and all that kind of stuff and still have just floating windows, you know, anchored in 3D space. But yeah, I imagine just taking the standard iPad app, it's just going to be a window, isn't it? But you'll have other apps that are more designed for it. We can have multiple windows, for example, or different bits and pieces, overlays in the real world. We'll have to wait and see. I'm sure they're going to have some really good ones to show off at WWDC.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, they will have to. It will be the gold standard of apps.
There'll be some real wow ones. What else are we hearing here? Ah, this is an interesting one. So I wasn't hearing Apple may be selling this at cost or even taking a hit on the hardware. I don't believe that last one.
I don't believe that for a second. No way.
I mean, Apple likes to usually take a nice round 37% profit on those. But the rumor, they're still saying that even if they were to sell it at the cost, what it costs to make, it'd still be at least $1,500.
That's still expensive, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think the idea being they want to get a foothold. If they're coming out of a $3,000 headset, then they're not getting a foothold. I'd argue at $1,500, they're not getting a foothold. They might in the professional market be aimed at that, but they're certainly not in the consumer market.
Yeah, it's still a big chunk of change, isn't it? when you think
it's,
about
it's
it.
Not like spending $1,500 on a phone. Bless you. Yep. On a phone you use constantly every day and take everywhere with you. There's the center of your life. Or even, you know, $2,000 on a MacBook, which, you know, you use for work or education. This is quite a bit different. To spend that much on it, it's going to be a big jump. Not many people, I think, will be doing it.
Yeah, I just, I'm curious. I want to see it. I really do, you know, because VR isn't new. We know that, but it's the AR, VR aspect of it, isn't it? Which is what we are intriguing to see. And of course, we've all seen the renders of the hardware and things like that. Just want to see whether or not is it all it's meant to be, or will it be something very different?
I suspect not. But I mean, what price would you pay for one if it was $600 or $700, dollars, I should say? Would you go, all right, let's give this a whirl? I know $1,500, you might be tempted if you could see some value in it.
I was just going to say, if I could, if there was some value in it,
I mean, you could do away with all your multiple monitors on your desk and just put the headset on, disappear into the Matrix.
Yeah, I mean, I'm up for it. I mean, if the money, you know, money aside, why not? Let's go for it, you know? It's comfortable to wear and it gives me a great working environment. Rock on, let's go.
Exactly.
If it's gonna bankrupt me and the experience is going to be middling, I'm gonna like, no, you're right, I'll wait.
You'll wait. I'll pick one up in the sale.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely pick one up in the sale. Okay, so what else we got then in the bucket today?
So according to German, we should expect the M3 line of processors by the end of the year or maybe early next year. Now, we've still not seen a Mac Pro yet, and we're talking about the M3. I don't know, it's crazy. But apparently, they've seen it appear in developer logs of apps running prototype M3 Macs now. They're in the wild. And they kind of indicate that the base M3 Pro chips may feature 12 CPU cores, 18 GPU cores, and up to 36 gig of RAM on the base model. So that is two more CPU cores and two more GPU cores compared to the baseline M2 Pro. Apparently, that's upping the efficiency cores from 4 to 6. So 6 performance, 6 efficiency now. And I think the max on the M2 Pro is 32 gig, is it? That will now jump to 36 gig on the M3 Pro.
M3 is like, you know, it's the day is long, then, you know, the sun rises, the you know, the moon comes out. We knew it was coming. We knew they were coming. And, you know, the incremental swings bump there, you know, we're looking, we've got increase on both of the high efficiency cores, high performance, and efficiency cores. We've got a bump on the GPU cores again. I wouldn't be surprised if we look for another, 30% overall improvement.
Yeah, and they're jumping down to 3 nanometer as well. So that'll hopefully be performance and
power. Yeah, but the 3 nanometer is not across every part of that SoC though, is it? You know, that's the thing. But they're going to be faster. We'll probably get better battery life. And I would imagine probably about, as I said, 30% increase on, you know, the year before, given what we've seen already. Now, the interesting part about this, though, again, is that if you are going to look to buy a Mac, you better hold off because, you know, if they launch this, it's going to, like I say, towards the end of the year, probably Q1 next year, you kind of want to wait off for this as well. Now, the Mac Pro, biggest question mark around it. Where is this Mac Pro? Does it exist? Have they canned it? It wouldn't be outside the realms of, you know, reality to say it's probably dead in the water at this stage, isn't it? Unless they've got an M3 Ultra in the works, which is going to be what they wanted to have.
Oh, yeah. Are we going to see the Mac Pro? I just don't think we are.
No. I mean, these chips, let's take this M3 chip on paper, yeah?
Yeah.
I bet you that is far more powerful than any of the Intel chips that have ever been in the Mac Pro.
Oh, definitely. I'd say the M2 Ultra probably is as well.
Yeah. The only difference is the RAM. Now, I have to be honest with you. Why would you have 36 gig of RAM versus 32? I mean, I'm sorry. I'm just, in my mind, that doesn't look, I don't like that.
You say that, but some of the new Intels do 48 gig of RAM, don't they?
Yeah, they're doing weird numbers.
24 and 48.
It's a weird one there.
So maybe. But then, you know, Mac Pro still has the advantage of the fact that you could slap a decent GPU in it. I'm not saying the M1s aren't, but there's no replacement for sticking a giant NVIDIA GPU, not that it's
sport. No, not at all.
An AMD one, I should say, in there. and power the only down.
The only thing I will say for Apple is, you know, if you look at M1 to M3, you're probably looking at a 50% increase in performance overall, right?
Yep.
Intel, and no, how many generations would you have to step through Intel to get 50% improvement on performance across the board?
I don't know. I mean, the jump from the 12 to the 13 was quite a big jump. I don't know if it's 50%. I wouldn't say it's not far off it. The 13th gen was a massive increase for Intel.
Yeah, but Mac Silicon, the jump in performance every time is consistent, to say the least. But yeah, the M3 was coming. We knew it was coming. You know, we're going to get M3. We will get an M3 standard edition. We're going to get an M3 Pro. We'll get an M3 Max. If they keep the naming conventions. And I don't know, maybe this time around we might get an M3 Ultra, you know, that we didn't get on.
Maybe.
Because we didn't see it. They didn't update the studio.
Ultra, have we?
No, they didn't do a studio update because originally wasn't any need, I don't think, was there, from a performance perspective. But we may see the studio line, if they haven't canned it, which the rumours are they have, get updated. So that could be where we see the M3. But yeah, look, all to play for 2 weeks' time with Dub. You know, we never know. We may see a hint of the Mac Pro. Who knows? But yeah, time will tell, my friend.
Mythical unicorn.
It is. It is indeed. Well, that's probably a good place for us to wrap up for today. I am slowly succumbing to jet lag. We'll be back next week for episode 135 with all of the latest show notes and information. I can tell you now, we've already got a few stories in the can, and there is a, I'm gonna say we've got a GTA 6 story in there as well, but I won't give any more away of that as well. But that's something good to look forward to. Of course, you can find us on Twitter. Yep, we're still there. The tumbleweed is passing by, but we're still there at Weekly Tech Rant, and all of our show notes at techrant.online. Of course, you can get this podcast, tell your friends about it, wherever you get your podcast. We're on all of the major platforms. So give us a like, give us a review, tell us what you don't like. If it's rubbish, let us know. You know, we'd be interested to hear. Can't guarantee we'll take your views on board, but we'll certainly take a, you know, listen to them as well. Right then, I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good day, all. Sorry, I was muted and you caught me by surprise.
We'll try that again. I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good day, all.